Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The show is about to begin.
Welcome to the podcast, Conscience That Made Us. Interviews and stories, tales from the bus. We love taking you back to when it all went down. The greatest live shows and that cheering crowd sound. It's Concerts, Concerts That Made Us, ConcertsThatMadeUs.com.
Hi, this is Daryl Scotty with Big Yard. You're listening to Concerts That Made Us.
Well, you know when I'm through, maybe you hear I could stand on my own again. Don't believe what they say, 'cause drinking 90 proof is only proof I still ain't over you yet. I've been trying for months to keep from falling apart.
Scotty, you're very welcome to Concerts That Made Us.
Oh man, Brian, thank you so much, man. It's just a pleasure to be here with you. And of course, you know, we're across a pond from one another. So modern technology has just kind of, you know, brought us together. Brothers from different mothers.
I like it. It's fantastic to have you now. I'm really looking forward to diving into your your past, your present, your future. It's going to be a great conversation now. So speaking of the past, you have a pretty interesting history when it comes to music. Before retiring from the road in the early 80s, you were a pretty successful guitarist. Can you tell us a bit more about that time in your life?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I had a fun ride. I didn't really understand the industry as I've understood it over the last three or four decades. But guitar was something. I mean, I appreciate your compliment there. But guitar was really something that that I did. So. I guess from the very beginning to get the attention of women or girls, girlfriends. And I was drawn to it because I grew up in an area and I had seen Joe Walsh and guys like Phil Kagi when I was a kid playing. And I had friends in school that were great guitar players. One of my good friends went off to play with 38 Special. And so guitar became something. And I had a younger brother that was an incredibly talented musician, could pick up just about any instrument, but I could sing, and I started writing early, and I just loved to perform and engage, and so started playing with bands, doing talent shows. Things happened. Got a high school band, went on the road, and it broke up in the middle of a tour. I was broke, sitting in a town that I didn't know anybody with, except met a friend. And he let me stay on his couch for a few days till my agent called me and said that Spiral Staircase, a group that had a hit in 69 called More Today. I love you more today than yesterday. And I had heard the song. I thought it was Chicago because it had horns in it. But I heard the song and didn't know the band very well. But I took a leap of faith. Didn't have any money. Rubbed a couple nickels together, flew to Sarasota, Florida, got there. Two other guitar players were in the room that were guitarists. I felt more of myself as an entertainer. And I was the band leader and kind of had a business sense. But I got up on stage. They asked me if I could sing. And at the time, my band, I wasn't the lead singer, but I did sing. And so I started a hit at the time, which was Top 40. I'm going to date myself right now for all you listeners. That's okay. I wear it on my sleeve. And it was Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers, who I eventually met. I eventually met Pat. And I sang the song. It was just a solo audition. And both the other guitar players, like I said, they were instrumentalists. They were both good players. I sat there kind of, wondering what I was going to do. Mom, now I'm in Sarasota and I'm broke. It's an experiment that's gone, dreadfully bad. And so I went back up to my room. I got the gig. And that weekend I was on tour with Spiral Staircase. And that really kind of opened my eyes. Met a lot of people and began to tour pub, to open for shows like with Ray Charles and the list goes on. One of my favorites was Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders. I don't know if you ever met the Subi, yeah. was his name, yeah, right? And great, great big band, huge band. And just opened with a lot of acts, traveling up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And then it had its ride and its run, I ended up going back to my hometown and put a band together and then got a call from my father at the time, who was in California, and he wasn't feeling well, and he asked me to come out and help him, and I did. And I kind of left the performance part of my career at that time. You call it retired, but I went to California and pursued other interests, stayed in music, became a manager, started to produce, started to make records, and kind of things went from there.
Right. What was that kind of, that part like, working at that side, behind the scenes more so than out on stage, performing?
Great question, man. It's my story, so I'm going to stick to it. But I think it was helpful, man, because it gave me the sense of, it gave me the sense of really how things work, right? And so I met a lot of people in on the business side of it, and I stayed into music and kept putting out records and eventually started managing acts. I worked with Pete Escovedo and did booking for Sheila E. and the long list. I won't drop a bunch of names, but I started working on that level, met Bill Graham. I think to make the answer more poignant, I think to the point that I think would be interesting for your listeners is that it gave me the opportunity to learn enough over the decades. Because remember, I started in vinyl, right? So I went vinyl, cassettes, you know, eight track, man. And today I find, because I'm still developing artists and I'm putting out my CD and working with people like yourself, and the first song off the EP is doing far better than I ever thought. Our second single is just got released last week, State of Mind. But the first single, Proof, it seems to have done far better than I thought for an emerging new act, if you will. But what I've learned is I'm doing artist development, and I'm working with a young guy in his 30s that I met here in Phoenix. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. Just north in a little town called Cave Creek in North Scottsdale. But I'm working with this kid, and he's got his fingers in a lot of stuff, very creative, putting out great music, great video content, great social content. But he is so inundated with all of that, that now I have, especially over this last couple of years of putting out this record and, you know, learning this new digital world, I have a better sense of it. And I think that those roots of being on both sides of the music business has helped me kind of conceptualize it, because it's daunting, man. I mean, these kids are, you know, what am I, do I want to be a TikTok star, or do I want to be a recording artist? What do I want to do? And they got to do a little bit of it all. There's a method to the madness. And I think the best, I talk a lot with this young man, his name's Joey Gudos, and go to his Instagram or his socials or his YouTube. The kid's really creative, and I think he's going to be a star. I really do. And we're going to get behind this kid, but he's a good man. He's just a likable young fella. I lost my point now. But today, of course, these kids are what do I want to do and how do I want to do it? And I tell Joey, stay focused, man. Keep things in priority so you know you don't get too hung up in it all. Because when it does hit, and when you are successful, A, it's going to go quick, and it's going to go fast, and in your case, it could be big, and you've got to be really careful of the pitfalls, man, because there are a lot of them out there. So, yeah, man.
Yeah. Something I'm actually intrigued by is how do you approach your music career nowadays when you're putting out music, you know, because you obviously have a lot of knowledge about developing artists, you know, and putting acts together. How does that impact your own music?
Well, let me see how I can answer that and keep it brief. I think when I moved out here, I had no idea when I moved to Arizona that I'd ever do this again. My last record was in 2005. It was on Fair Oaks Records. Bob Kilpatrick produced it. Phil Keaggy collaborated with me. Randy Stonehill collaborated with me. So if any of those fans are out there, then you know it was a CCM record, Contemporary Christian Record. It ran its course, and it was fun, and I was involved in a lot of business at the time, the economy was up and down and all over the place, and I decided to focus, you know, mostly on my business concerns, which I'm glad I did, because it allowed me, when COVID happened, to really take stock of what was going on, and decided to leave California. I'll keep that story short, but come to Arizona. I bought this home in this incredible community called Cave Creek, right? And I started meeting all these incredibly talented people. And for whatever reason, I was sitting around my patio with some friends that I'd met here and some good friends that had been living in this area. And they like to talk about, you know, the everybody kind of, you know, gets a little starstruck, you know, what Spiral Staircase and that hit song. I remember that, you know, would you play it? And I hadn't really thought of performing or playing, but I went and got my guitar and I brought it out to the patio and played the song. And I saw something in their eyes, man. I felt a little magic, you know, and I thought, wow. So I had my wife and I, as we were getting accustomed to the area, we're going out and I ran into this young man named Alex Chacone. He's part of Big Yard. He and I started playing together. I'm going to answer your question here in a second. The first thing that we decided to do, and he booked a few places here in town, and I said, well, I want to go out and play. So we put a little duo together, then a trio together, then a quintet, and I started going out and playing. And I can tell, you know, your fans that it wasn't long before, through this process of rehearsal and going out and playing, why I, you know, was reminded very often of why I don't play in bands anymore. But not that I won't, but I just, you know, at this point I'm you know, I'm focused on other things. But so we went out and played, and I think now to answer your question, I had some original material that we really weren't doing that I had done in the past, and that was kind of in the past. So this, when we went out and I started playing, I started learning some and covering stuff. Eric Clapton, Kenny Chesney, Old Dominion, Van Morrison, some of my favorite Sting songs. And I put this show together. In fact, I did the Spiral Staircase hit More Today Than Yesterday for the first time, really, in over 30 years. I put it in my show.
Mad.
Never did that song again after I left the band. I was so, you know, really, I got to play that again. So at any rate, that helped me, man. And so one night I was up here and I wrote a song. It was a song that I wrote. I call it my a song I wrote in 30 minutes that took me 30 years to write, because it was about my wife and our marriage and what she meant to me. Didn't get on 54th Street, the EP, that project that we're putting out now, but it will be on the next one. That experience of learning that material, Brian, and playing some new contemporary music and some of the stuff that I'd grown up with and songwriters that I admired helped me. And so when I started writing this batch, and I think I wrote about 20 some songs, something like that, we narrowed it down to 6 and we produced 54th Street. So I think it was helpful to play other material. And I tell young musicians that a lot, man, jam, play, collaborate.
Yeah, it's the best way for young musicians. Jamming is the only way to actually improve. You know, you can only do so much sitting in a room tinkering on the guitar or the drums yourself. You need to play with other people, and that's when you'll really notice how good you can be. But I'm glad you mentioned 54th Street. It's your new EP. It's coming out. When is it coming out, actually?
Well, we dropped 2 singles, and now we're hashing around. I work with a company in the UK for all my marketing, PR, playlisting, radio, everything. And now we're talking about, we were on, and that second single dropped April 11. So we try to keep 6 weeks between drops. And so we're now talking end of May for our next one. And we thought maybe we would drop the EP at that point and then do a focus song on it. And we couldn't really pick, because it's a diverse project. I don't know if you've listened to the whole record or not. I sent you, you know, off the website where you can listen to them, but there's 2 on Spotify right now. So we were thinking about that third one. And what we've decided to do, Brian, is to hold off on the EP drop a third single, just because there's so much diversity in it, and the production value and the sonic value in that record. We know that we've got something here, and we're getting presses, and the reviews are saying, you know, you've got this nostalgic, you know, style, which is the writing that I do, and I wear it on my sleeve, man. I'm product of everything I've ever heard or written or read, as a matter of fact. And so But I teamed up with some young producers, Alex Chacone and Aaron Howard, and we came up with a more of a modern twist on being able to do these songs in terms of their sonic and production value. So I think what we want to do is showcase the diversity of the record, and then EP might drop, to get to your question, probably June, end of June.
Nice.
And then we'll have all of the six songs available. And then we've already got the next record ready to go, which is called Poets and Heroes. That'll drop first. It's probably July, something like that. And then we plan on dropping singles into the, you know, every 6 weeks or so into the first of the year.
Man, you have a busy year ahead. Was there any memorable moments or challenges during production of the record?
Yeah. One that comes to mind is it all started up in my studio here and working on a DAW, which I'd never worked before. Remember, I came from vinyl, right? So now I've got a DAW and I'm in a studio and I'm working on that and I'm with Alex Chacone. We're laying down all of our basic tracks. In fact, that whiteboard behind me was our roadmap. And then we decided, you know, we got something here, man. So we took it away from this studio. We went to a studio in Phoenix called Pyramix, and we laid down live drums. I had written some horn tracks. Again, going back to the diversity of that record, wrote some horn tracks. We brought in a horn section, put an ensemble of singers together. And I think the one thing that comes to mind based on your question was I'd been working with the producer, Alex Chacone, who's also a talented musician. And Aaron Howard came into the picture, and they both knew each other and respected one another's work. But I found that there was this mutual respect, but the relationship wasn't symbiotic in terms of those guys really sitting down in the same room and all of us putting our heads together and collaborating and coming up with magic. But I found a way to do it. And that was by departmentalizing this record. And so Aaron, we brought on to produce the background vocals when we were ready. Alex Chacone did the rest of the producing and worked with the engineer in terms of, and then the final stems. And then we gave all the stems to Aaron Howard. He said, I'd like to have a shot at mixing this. We had found some other mixers, a couple in your neck of the, or on your side of the pond rather. And we gave Aaron a shot at the mixing, the six songs. We loved what he did. And we went from there. So I think the controversy and that's a big word for this, but the challenge was I knew that when I got those guys together in the same room, and now we have been, and now we're partners in Big Yard Nation, and now we're putting down and collaborating and we're all working together. And I had a feeling. I just had a feeling.
Right. I like it. You know, something I'm always intrigued by as well is when you complete a body of work such as this record and it's out there, it's finished, how do you look back on it in your mind?
Well, I'm going to stay to this record. And then that was your question. So I look back at this as being, on one hand, I would pinch myself and say, wow, really? This happened? Man. And then I'll pinch my other hand and say, really, Daryl? So you did that?
Right.
So I look back at it as this experience from starting in this room with the DAW, moving through into the other studios, the collaborations with guy like Chuck Hall and guy like Bill Dutcher. We did some co-writing together, bringing in Carl Hagersill from Kenny Loggins' band, who did all the keyboard parts up in this studio, which are, you know, a signature. I mean, they're big parts of the song. And there was an emotional couple times in the record, particularly a song, I don't know if it'll get released as a single, but it's on 54th Street called Give It Away. It's kind of my mantra towards life. You know, we can't keep it until we give it away, right? It's about love. And it's a beautiful song, kind of a ballad, slower tempo. But Alex did some guitar work up here in the studio before we took it out and worked with it in this other studio. And he did a take, and I said, let's try this. And I gave him some ideas. And now I'm at the board and I'm engineering and he's playing. And so I said, do this and slow it. And then he did it. And then I said, give me something right in between the two. Third take. And he played the guitar work on Give It Away. And now we're in, you know, going into the bridge, coming out of the bridge, going into the outro. And I'm thinking, oh man, whoa, is he going to keep going with this? Is he going to go here with this because he set that up? I mean, I'm getting a John Mayer kind of a feel from this, man. And we get to the end and he did it. And then he looked at me and he says, I think I could do that better. And I choked up, man. And I said to him, nope, no, you're not going to do it again because this was magical. And I got emotional, man. And yeah, it was a standout emotional time for me on that record.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It sounds like pure magic, you know? Absolute magic. My goodness.
Thank you, man.
I suppose we better move on to some concert related questions. It is concerts that made us after all. First off, as a concert goer, what concerts have made you?
Well, we probably should go back, right? I mean, in terms of, well, the very first thing that made me, which wasn't a concert, was sitting around with my family in 64 when those four lads from across the ocean went on the Ed Sullivan Show. And I knew then that that's what I wanted to do. And I can elaborate on that story. I won't. But things developed and started to, like I said, learning guitar and singing and, trying to emulate them, right? I was young, man. I don't even think I'm a teenager at that point. And so got into school and high school and concerts started happening. And I was living in Akron, Ohio, which I don't know if you know much about Akron, but that's where Devo's from. That's where Chrissy Hynde is from. That's where Phil Keaggy is from. Cleveland was an area that Joe Walsh was from. Eric Carmen, I can go on, man. That's where the Rock Hall of Fame is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cleveland. So 30-mile trip, and we would go to concerts. Well, the very first concert I ever went to was something that we wanted to see. It was Jimi Hendrix, the late, great Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, my God.
And I can't tell you, Brian, I probably, from the announcement that Jimi Hendrix was coming into Cleveland, was probably, I want to go back, but it felt like forever. But from the announcement to when we could buy tickets seemed like, you know, again, forever. So every day I thought about that. We put a group of guys together. It was about six or seven of us. I had an older brother who drove. I didn't even drive at the time. And he drove us up to Cleveland. We sat in line for overnight. The guys were camping out, man, with sleeping bags. We got our tickets. They were pretty good tickets. We were there early. And we went back now about a month and a half later, where every night I thought of that show. I'm going to see Jimi Hendrix, man.
Oh,
and so there's the show, and he comes on, and you know, Fire, Purple Haze, you know, Hey Joe, All Along the Watchtower. And, you know, he had just broken big out of England, and it changed my life, man. And so from there, you know, we saw the Doors, Janis Joplin, you know, list goes on through that era. I think in recent time, over the last few years, I think the show that's probably made its biggest impact was Steely Dan in 2019. Saw him again recently, and then saw the last Sting tour. And I met him back in the 80s when he was with Police. But this tour here, My Songs tour, was an incredible. I just think he's so prolific and so intelligent and wise. I'm a big fan of Sting.
Yeah. You know what? You actually just blew me away. I can't believe you have seen Jimi Hendrix and The Doors and Janis Joplin. The Doors are one of my personal favorite bands of all time. I have to ask you, what was that concert like?
Oh, man. Jim Morrison was so charismatic from the moment he walked on stage. I can tell he probably had a few pops before he came out, which is cool. We all dug that, right? I'm sure he left the stage a couple times. I understand he would go behind one of those amp stacks and do his thing, whatever that might be, and come back out. And of course, he's, you know, his reputation preceded him, and his lifestyle became his demise. But he was an incredibly talented, gifted poet and charismatic performer. And his guys, the band, you know, Robbie Krieger played, he was the keyboard player, if I
Krieger was the guitarist.
Guitarist, and then the keyboard player, they're Manzurk, fighting right yeah. now. Manzurk, they're in a feud right now, but he played keyboard bass. And so it was a three-piece band with Jimmy, up, with Morrison up front. But it was an incredible show, and their songs, and it was a little smaller theater that I saw them in. It was called the Civic Theater, and we had seen Jimmy in the Civic Auditorium in Cleveland. Yeah, so and that's where I saw Janis, and you know, I went to a lot of concerts, man.
I'd say so. Oh my God. And, you know, when it comes to your own shows then that you've played over your entire career, is there one that stands out as the highlight that you'll always remember?
Wow. Man. You know, when I was on tour with Staircase, there were a lot of great shows that we did. Back then, they would team us up. And we would go out with and play with other bands. And I played with Billy Joe Royal and did shows with Nancy Sinatra and the Box Tops. And, you know, the list goes on there. But there was a show that we did. We had a stay at the Steel Pier in Atlantic City. And that's now a Trump property, right?
Right.
And they had the Steel Pier had at the end of the pier a diving horse that would go up and, you know, and then dive into a pool. That's what it was draw. That was the draw, rather. But it had a theater of about 2,000 seats. And Staircase did a stint there for, I think, 2 weeks. And so we did two shows a day, an afternoon show and then a twilight show. And on one of those days, I go back into the green room before our first show, and Ray Charles is sitting in the green room, and I'm stunned. I mean, you know, Ray Charles, man. I mean, yeah. And here we are. I'm you know, we're going to do a show. We're going to go out. We're going to open this show, and we're going to bring out Ray Charles to this auditorium, man. And I got to tell you, I worked with a lot of people as a young man and never really ever got starstruck. I got more starstruck over meeting sports celebrities, you know, baseball. I was a big baseball fan. But Ray Charles, man. And so, yeah, he gave me the goosebumps, man.
I'd say so. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And, you know, we love hearing about this. Is there a gig that you've played where, say, everything went wrong? You could say it was the worst. And how did you overcome it?
Oh, man. I almost wish you hadn't asked that question, Brian.
Right.
I got to tell you that, you know, working live, whether it's in TV, whether it's on stage or whatnot, is probably the most nerve-wracking, problematic thing you can do. You can fix what you do wrong in a studio, right? But when you're playing, what do? When something happens, well, some guys handle it well, some guys don't. I was kind of in the middle. It rattled me, but I was professional enough that I had to say, think quick, how are we going to get beyond this? Mics dropping, PAs go power outages. I remember seeing Jeff Beck with Rod Stewart at the Grandy Ballroom in Cleveland, and power went out, and Rod Stewart stood up and still sang, you know, his song to the crowd, and everybody loved it. So there are a couple guys that can handle it quite well. I tried to do it because I knew that I was in front of people and I wanted to be professional. But what I learned, Brian, I think the takeaway on this is music, man, is just an offering. That's all it is. And when you play your song and you get done with your recording and you back away from it, you get it done, you get it mastered, you release it. It's just a song. I can always go back to any of the songs and say, I wish I had done it this way or sang it this way or changed that word or whatever. And like an artist, you got to walk away from the canvas, right? So a song is just a song. And when you're performing it live, it's just an offering and it's done and it's over. And you put it out there and I think the more real you can be and the more honest and believable that you can be, you can suck. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can.
Thank you very much. And it's okay as long as it's real, as long as it's honest, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. All right. Yeah. And before we dive into the last couple of questions, then future plans, is there anything you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, well, lots of that. We're going to continue, like I said, releasing music. We're building our catalog. I'm working with a longtime associate of mine, which is a great story I'd love to share with you. I won't, but a guy named Larry Antonino, he's the bass player for Pablo Cruz right now. He and I are working together. He's producing my new record. He's now part of Big Yard Nation, working with Alex and Aaron, helping us develop some artist deals. We're going to continue putting out our catalog on Big Yard through Big Yard Nation. We're going to develop and we're releasing music for Larry Antonino, who's a jazz artist, kind of a smooth jazz with an edge artist. He's got a song out now called Drive Time. Just dropped another song called Just My Imagination, a cover of that song. It's done instrumentally. We're going to be releasing Joey Gudos and some of his tracks. So we're building up catalog and building some development deals. And then my plan is to hook up with one, two, maybe a half a dozen music supervisors. And because of the way the industry has changed with songwriting and artistry and the way consumers digest their music on their phones, most of it free, and songwriters, you know, seem to be, you know, writing and making money for the platforms more than anything, I'm going to develop some synced relationships with some music supervisors, and I'm going to get this music, particularly the songs on this next record, Poets and Heroes, into film and TV and commercials, see what happens. You know, a buddy of mine is Pat Carney from Black Keys. He's a little younger, but we went to the same high school. And I eventually met him his story is incredible. Pat said to me that, you know, some of his biggest deals have been through, you know, having producers contact him for one of his songs for a commercial, man, TV commercial.
Yeah. It's funny how it's gone that way.
Yeah, it is. And you know, is it a sellout? Well, back in the day, I might have thought that. But today, what's happening is songwriters and creators are not getting their just. What's going to happen when AI takes over and algorithms come in and write lyrics and write chord progressions and loopers come in and do this, that, and the other? It's going to change. And if guys like John Mayer and you know, I can ramble on a bunch of names, guys like Sting, guys like, you know, these artists, Coldplay, we talked about U2 before we did the show, you know, and that U2 is another one. U2 was a group that didn't go out and play covers. They were jammers. They just collaborated and they learned and they grew their sound and their personality by just playing. None of them were really even that good of musicians, right? Look yeah. What they did.
Yeah.
So I think now syncing and looking at those deals for not only Big Yard and for the stuff that I'm writing, but some of this artist development that we're doing. I think it's got to happen that way. Definitely.
I like it. Right. We'll dive into the last couple of questions. These are a couple of random fun questions. I'm intrigued to see your answer. First off, what are you currently obsessed with? It can be anything at all now.
Great question. I'm obsessed with a problem that I'm having in my ear. And it developed about 15 years ago in my Eustachia valves. And they would close up and I would feel like I was underwater, right? And it became very annoying for me. And I dealt with it. And then I found out that there were some procedures that could happen. And I went to an ENT that I was referred to. And we sat down and he told me about a couple things. And if I could turn back the hands of time, of course, we all have things that we would like to turn back the hands of time on, but it would be on the day I was in his office and said, okay, let's try that. And I did. And that was a month ago. And I've lost half of my hearing in my left ear. And my ears get plugged up. My left ear's plugged up right now. I feel I'm kind of underwater. It's given me a little bit of a voice problem. Now, it's supposed to get better. Your brain will get used to things like that. That's kind of a daunting thought in and of itself for me, but I'm just trying to hang in there. And I'm working the tools of staying in the moment, man, and trusting, you know, just trusting in this process that, you know, that, you know, my faith is just, I'm working on that, but, it's working on that for me. And yeah, man. So I don't know how much more time you want to, there's probably a lot of ways I could answer that question, but you know, that's one of the challenges I'm dealing with right now, man.
My goodness. That's like, as a musician, that has to be one of the worst things, you know, something affecting your hearing, something damaging your hearing. Oh my God. I really hope it gets better soon for you.
God bless you, man. It's a little scary. You know, I'm a record producer now and, but I'm going to figure it out. You know, we're going to figure it out. And I ain't over yet, man.
Good to hear. Good to hear. The next question. So if you could collaborate, play a show, open for any musician or band on the planet, who would it be?
That's a hands down answer for me, Brian.
Okay.
It's Sting.
Right. Why so?
I love his work. I'd love the challenge of sitting down in a room with him. Particularly, I'd love the challenge of going out and playing 4 hours of golf with him. I say that as a challenge because I just find him to be a giant amongst giants, intellectually, talent-wise. I saw his latest tour. He had his nephew open for him, who did tracks and was good and had great energy. And I thought, man, if I was on that show right now. Now, that's a little bit of a egocentric thing to say, but I couldn't help but feel it, man. And so, yeah, if I had a chance, I'd love to. So Sting, if you're listening to this, my friend, contact Brian and just let me know, man.
Yes. Please do, Sting. Please do. And the final one. So what is your go-to album? What's an album you constantly go back to?
That is unbelievably hard question for me. I go back to so many. I do listen to Sting's Essentials a lot, but I'm listening right. Let me answer that now. Okay. So okay. If it were today and I was out taking a bicycle ride, I might put on Marcus Mumford's solo record, Marcus Mumford. You know, I love his writing. I might play The Head and the Heart. I might play Matt Kearney. Those guys. That right now. So if I were to go back to an all-time record, I think it would have to be the White Album by the Beatles.
I like it. Some great ones there. Listen, Daryl, it's been an absolute blast now. I can't describe how much I've enjoyed it. Thanks a million.
Hey, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate you reaching out, man. God bless everybody. Thank you to your fans. Keep listening to the show. And yeah, man, Be at it.
Guys, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. And if you're interested in signing up the Band Builder Academy, use the link in the show notes below and enter the code CONCERTS and you'll receive 10% off. So, until next time, keep rocking.
Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show's over. It's over. You can go home. Go on. We'll see you next time. We'll be here.